Refinance activity is heating up. Are your originators ready to capture the opportunity? Join Optimal Blue experts Jared Sammy and Brennan O'Connell on October 7th at 1 p.m. Central for a live webinar, Refi Revival: Stay Ahead of the Curve with Originator Intelligence. You'll discover how to surface high-potential refinance leads from your closed loan data, reconnect with past borrowers using timely, data-driven outreach, and cut research time from 30 minutes to just one click. Register now with the link in the show notes for this episode to give your team the edge in quarter four and beyond. In case you missed it, Optimal Blue has announced the dates for its 2026 summit. Join us February 23rd to 25th at Talking Stick Resort and Conference Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, for a client-exclusive event packed with strategic insight and innovation. Attendees will gain early access to Optimal Blue's latest generative AI and automation tools, dive into expert-led sessions on pricing, compliance, and more, and experience hands-on demos of new capabilities. Plus, it's a chance to connect with capital markets pros, integration partners, and mortgage insiders, all while gaining actionable strategies to maximize profitability and sharpen your competitive edge. The Optimal Blue Summit, where proven mortgage expertise meets modern innovation to shape what's next. Early bird registration is now open at summit.optimalblue.com. Space is limited, so register today. Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Vice President of Hedging and Trading Client Services at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. It's Friday, August 29th. We're recording this ahead of the long weekend. We don't expect a ton of news to come out over the weekend, but I suppose you never know. Hopefully, this is still super relevant. It definitely should be. We're going to give a little preview later on of the unemployment report that's due on Friday, and also just some discussion around some of the Fed drama that's been happening. You know, as I speak right now, Lisa Cook is in court right now contesting her firing from the Federal Reserve, and there's just some general drama going on around that, and a bit of a narrative that continues to build that a year from now we may look back and see that the executive branch of the administration has control over the Fed. So we'll have some interesting discussion about that. But before we get in there, just in the way of data, the OBMMI continues to drift lower. We touched 6.5. Yay. 30-year fixed conventional is right at 6.5 right now. The 10-year is under 4.25. You know, with some of this drama, volatility, stuff going around with the Fed and probably a labor market that is struggling, it's good for rates. We hate to root for things like a recession or a poor job market, but it does tend to be good for interest rates. So, you know, we'd love to see something in the 6 range, you know, even a 5 handle, 5.99 would be, I think, an interesting way to get into the fall if we want to see a little bit of a refi boom. But anyway, we're hoping, but also, you know, closely watching the numbers and watching what's going on in the news. Volume hasn't picked up huge as a reaction to some of these lower rates. There may be a little seasonality coming into play there as well with just getting into the fall season and getting out of the traditional home buying season. So we'll talk about that too. So yeah, let's go check in with James, Jeff, and Alex and see what's going on in the market. All right, let's get into it, fellas. We've got kind of a power hour thing going here. We won't talk for an hour, but we've got the right heads in the room, I think, for a discussion about just wanted to check in on what's going on in the markets right now. If you're probably listening to this on Tuesday or Wednesday after the holiday weekend, we got together on Friday just to discuss what are the big things to keep in mind as we approach, for instance, the unemployment report that's coming out on Friday. And a lot of this, not renewed, but it's kind of the slow trickle of this barrage of drama around the Federal Reserve, right? Recently, it was the Lisa Cook issue with her being potentially fired and then suing back because of what Pulte is calling mortgage fraud, which technically, I think occupancy issues can be considered fraud, but those of you in the mortgage industry know a little bit more about this. Anyway, just wanted to open up the conversation with all of these things flying around. We were just talking and we just decided to hit the button and then start discussing this live. Maybe just start with what's happening this week. So we had PCE today. Where did that come in, Alex? That was just below 3%?
Just below 3%, came in at 2.9, which was at expectations. Equity markets seem maybe a little bit spooked by that and some consumer sentiment that came out this morning off the highs, all-time highs, of course. So really nothing to complain about there yet. But yeah, I think 2.9% inflation being on the Fed's preferred metric is what would have been 6 months ago, probably a headline number. But at this point, doesn't seem to be. It really hasn't captured the headlines all that much. It was really just, hey, it's at expectations and this is what the economists were expecting. But, you know, floating around 3% inflation is well above the pre-COVID target, and it's well above the 2.5% kind of post-COVID era target that the Fed has shifted its focus towards. So I do fear, and we'll get a better picture of this next week with the jobs report, but I do fear that there could be a stagflation scenario emerging here.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it is kind of funny, like you said, the 3% is not spooking anyone right now, whereas earlier on in the Fed's fight against inflation, this would have been seen as a setback. But then again, we have this like paradox of with the tariffs all being in the double digits and kind of the conventional textbook wisdom being that tariffs are ultimately passed on to the consumer. You would on paper expect inflation to be quite a bit higher by now because these tariffs have been in place for a very long time. But we're starting to see the profit margins at the producer level shrink, which is probably a good sign if there was any kind of excess there. But what's next, I guess? And that's what we will find out over this next, I don't know, 18 months.
Right. And this is likely that tariff inflation hit finally being priced in, as we talked about over the past couple podcasts. It's time to expect that companies are going to push the price increases onto the end consumer just because of they finally have a clear picture of what tariff rates are going to be, and they can tell that they're going to be in place for the foreseeable future. And in a lot of cases, you know, you can kind of expect this to be a one-time inflation hit. So I think that is maybe the idea that people are rolling with, seeing this kind of tick up a little bit here, hoping, you know, we're going to see it tick up, but then it should moderate.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow the money, it seems to be going there. I mean, we're still hitting record highs on the equity markets. Seems like every week. You know, going back to Liberation Day, the market thought that this was going to be absolute beatdown, these tariffs on the market. But now we're this slow trickle. It just, I don't know, somehow seems to be working mathematically.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can see how equities would continue to appreciate. I think it's smart to be in assets, you know, in an inflationary environment. It's smart to own things other than, you know, paper money.
Cash, yeah.
Yeah, I think the market is really just shrugging this one off, especially I think kind of the number one thing I looked at, I jumped straight to the CME Fed Watch and saw, you know, is this impacting the chances of a rate cut in September? And if anything, it increased slightly overnight from yesterday's count. So they're still fully expecting a rate cut in September.
Yeah, so the number wasn't 3.5 or 4. I guess that was the worry. So now we're seeing 90%+ that we're going to get a cut in September. And we have talked about how the Fed and even Powell's comments have capitulated at this point. They do seem to be more focused on the labor market. And that's the number we're going to get next week. I mean, expectations for that number, relatively low. We could get another revision. I mean, the last number was in the 70,000 range. So we could get a revision that's negative at this point. That could add even more fuel to the rate cut fire, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. When you said that there's a chance for a negative revision next month, I think that's totally in the books. And yeah, the expectation for this month is 73,000. So expect well below 100,000 jobs on the month for sure.
Just a level set on employment numbers. Just want to reiterate again, I think we need to decrease our expectations again because of immigration, like the new normal, right? The raw count, just decrease those expectations, continue to look at probably employment rate is just as important as the actual jobs added.
Yeah. I mean, just as a reminder to everybody, right? The unemployment rate is continuing to stay low. Like we're at 4.2% until you get over 5.5, not something to be super concerned about historically, but the fact that the economy has not needed to add jobs to keep that number low is likely a symptom of just kind of a trade-off between, you know, new folks coming into the job market, American-born people taking some of the jobs, potentially trading off with some of the jobs of non U.S. born workers who have may have been caught up in some of the mass deportations, or just there is not immigration right now coming across the border. Or I think, as we said before, that some folks are afraid to go to work with some of the raids and those kind of things going on. So it's just a weird transformation, and a fairly quick one, of the labor market. And Alex, you had some thoughts too, just on like what number should we be looking at, right? 4.2, that's the headline number that is always quoted, but there's other levels of BLS percentages of statistics that are changing quite a bit differently than that stagnant number.
Yeah, yeah. There's a full six, I believe, unemployment rates that they publish. The U3 is kind of the most oftenly quoted, which is pretty much everyone that is currently employed, and then those that are actively looking for a job and have been looking for, I believe it's less than, how many weeks is it? Maybe 8 weeks?
We'll go with that.
Maybe a financial quarter or so. those that are actively trying to find work. And since the Great Recession, this is a much longer term trend, but we've seen the other unemployment rates, which includes a lot of more marginally attached people that, you know, they were previously in that U3 unemployment category, but they've just gotten so many rejections, or they've found some employment or some other means of providing for themselves. So they've fallen out of what the BLS counts. And like the U6 unemployment, this includes a lot of these marginally attached people, or people who they're working part-time, but they prefer full-time employment. That is actually floating around 8%. And that's been trending up since 2023, after obviously major peak in 2020. But these are all just good things to keep an eye on as well. I think the U3 definitely underscores how employed the U.S. is.
Right. So, I mean, all of this kind of points to the narrative being accurate that the employment picture is probably quite a bit more bleak than one would think just reading the headline numbers, and that, you know, some of this trade-off in jobs in the short term could be seen as a good thing. But in general, the economy is not churning out new positions like it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, which could be a bad sign in terms of growth and just dynamism of our economy in general.
Absolutely. That appears to be the trend. I mean, just look at any major news outlet and what they've been publishing recently.
And Alex, as you said near the top here, that like that does imply a stagflationary environment, right? If we're having higher inflation creeping up and unemployment, even if it's, you know, kind of steady where it is, it's higher than where we want it, it's not a great start here. And I think it kind of pulls us back over towards the Fed and everything that's been happening there. So as we all know, by the time you listen to this, you know, we'll have a week left, 10 days until that first Fed cut, with whatever will happen with Lisa Cook. As we record this today, she's in court right now, actually, talking it through. And I've been kind of laughing about this, but her mortgage fraud, right, is signing two locations as a primary resident. I think that there's probably an LO listening to this right now thinking, oh, you're not allowed to do that. So it might be a little small. She might squeak through. But as, you know, Trump applies more pressure, there will be others on the Fed who are going to receive this type of pressure. They want to get interest rates lower, whether it's to get bonds in the right place to deal with the debt ceiling, whether it's to try and keep the economy steaming ahead, get more jobs. It's hard to say exactly what the goal is, but generally lower rates is better. And, you know, maybe the administration has just clawed onto that and is going, okay, well, lower is better. Let's get it at any cost.
Better affordability for homes, all of that, right? Like lower rates is what the administration has wanted since the beginning. And yeah, maybe at any cost, that's what gets done. Even if the cost is higher inflation, which we've kind of been warned could be some temporary pain. Can it cure everything if rates go lower? And there's certainly a building narrative out there that the, you know, a year from now, for instance, we will probably see a Fed that is no longer fully autonomous. Like, is that priced into the market? Like, what does that really look like? How bad does the inflation get if we go with a totally different philosophy that lower rates are more important than higher prices?
I would say it's almost inarguable that the Fed won't be controlled by Trump. You know, he has two board members that he's already elected. There's space for him to get two more on. That would be 4 out of 7. If they, you know, fall along with what he wants, that's a win on every single FOMAC meeting, right? He could dictate exactly it as long as they went along with what he wanted. And we're not necessarily seeing that right now. There's a couple of dissenters this month who said earlier, maybe 50. Now we're going back to 25. But it's hard to see, you know, a year out that there wouldn't be four, if not five, FOMAC members who were directly picked by Donald Trump.
Yeah, those dissenters are probably next on the chopping block. It's weird to think about because it has been, I mean, I believe it was back in the 50s that the Fed kind of was moved into this paradigm they're in now, which is full autonomy and you know, independence from the executive branch of the government. But it does seem to be, they seem to be getting pulled back in. And I've seen it likened to boiling a frog. If you're all familiar with that term, it's just kind of happening slowly so that there's no sudden moves that disrupt the market. Right. So you think back to Liberation Day, for instance, in terms of the tariffs, that was the big day where market tanked. It thought this was going to be the worst thing to happen. And then since then we've slowly implemented tariffs, made deals with other countries, with trading partners, and the market has thrived. Right. And then you go back to when Trump first started attacking the White House in general, first started attacking Powell. There was a sell-off in bonds. Rates went up. There was some worry that there would be a flight from treasuries, and that ended up not happening. And now there's just been this slow burn of attacking Powell, attacking the renovation of the headquarters. Now Lisa Cook is on the stand and so on. It'll probably continue for the next 6, 8, 12 months until there's a stacked deck, right? And we have, you know, White House sympathetic folks on that are voting for the on the FOMC, and it takes 7 out of 12, right? And it may not, especially if you fire several of them, it will not take long to take complete control of the Fed.
Not at all. And all else the same, I think one of you guys pointed out this morning that this would effectively give these Trump appointees control of the Fed until 2042, I believe one of you guys said.
Yeah.
I didn't see that, yeah.
Quite long term. And then as I pointed out, I don't see this being something everyone's going to back down from, or, you know, rather the other side's going to back down from. And I definitely see the Democrats being able to win an election on, hey, we're going to raise rates to tame inflation. Everyone's in pain right now. But I see like a stack the court kind of issue becoming apparent, because if they can't remove Trump's appointees, well, they'll just say, okay, well, now the FOMAC council is going to be 24 members and we're just going to throw in 12 new people. So I could see that emerging as well. But who's going to want to deviate from record low rates?
As we know, if they start chopping these rates down, right, it's good for us. There should, in theory, be more, you know, lower rates, more ability to get a house. But if that drives inflation, then there's housing appreciation. And if wages stay stagnant, then now your first-time home buyers, even with a lower rate, are looking at a more expensive property with less buying power than they had previously. So this isn't actually a panacea here. Getting lower rates is going to help our industry. That's not necessarily correct if inflation does come back.
Good point. Yeah, if wages don't chase it, then inflating your way out of a situation doesn't work, right? Otherwise, maybe it does. At least it's one school of thought that could get you there. It could make, you know, the debt load on the government and everybody, really, you know, debt dollars become easier to pay off if rates are low and wages go up. But yeah, if wages don't increase, all this whole plan does not work. We just see higher prices, you know.
It's a perfect Labor Day theme right there, Jim. That's ties in.
I hadn't even thought it that far through, but you're absolutely right. There's some tie-ins to the history of Labor Day there. All right. What else on these subjects?
Kind of, it's going to probably fly under the radar, but Marin, who's Kugler's replacement, he's going before the Senate Banking Committee next week on Thursday. I expect him to get, you know, wave through, but you might see maybe some testy comments or, you know, lines of questioning out of that. And hey, if there is maybe somehow some sort of blocking there, that could add a whole new narrative to everything we've been talking about here. But I don't really see the legislative standing up at this juncture, in all honesty.
Right. I mean, that's what it would take was a gang of hawks to come in and kind of push back against what is obviously happening, which is to bring doves into the Federal Reserve.
Exactly.
More on this next week, but otherwise, yeah, keep an eye on the Fed drama right now, and obviously watch the unemployment report on Friday, because that has the potential to be a big market mover, especially if we get a revision to the downside for the already low number we saw in early August, especially if that number ends up going negative, meaning that we're subtracting jobs from the economy. And remembering that we have, you know, we're definitely adding jobs in healthcare, still adding jobs in hospitality and construction, but the rest of the economy is likely subtracting. And to have a net negative number would mean that that kind of rally of, you know, hospitality and hospitals keeping the numbers up is over, and we're in a contraction mode, which is, I think, dangerous for a lot of the narratives going on. But again, it's good for rates. It's good for mortgages. Okay, let's wrap this thing up. Big thanks to James, Jeff, Alex. Super fun conversation today. A lot to think about. Don't forget to watch the employment report coming out on Friday, and just, you know, keep your ear to the ground in terms of the discussions about the Fed and Lisa Cook and the whole drama surrounding some of the changes that are going to be likely happening in the Fed here over the next few months. That's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning in to Optimal Insights.
Is your technology vendor selling real solutions or just the idea of them? Too often, companies pitch big returns, offer free trials, and promise seamless automation, only to reveal during implementation that the tech doesn't actually exist. At Optimal Blue, we take a different approach. Our AI-powered automation is already live, already delivering, and already saving lenders real dollars. We show you exactly where the ROI comes from and how it reduces risk. No vague timelines, just proven technology that's working in production today. AI at Optimal Blue isn't just about delivering software. It's about empowering lenders to make smarter decisions, operate more efficiently, and stay ahead of the curve. Built around real capital markets challenges, informed by direct engagement with thousands of clients, and focused on delivering measurable value at no additional cost to clients. While others talk about AI, we're delivering it. Innovation that delivers for your bottom line. Learn more at optimalblue.com.